Toss to Turbin. Turbin's in for the touchdown.
Have fun, play with some heart, play with passion.
Turbin is in. He gets the call on second down and goal and pushes it through, and the Colts have scored a touchdown.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to welcome everybody back to season two officially. Getting started today, our first episode of season two launching with a very special guest, Carson Palmer. Welcome to the show, Turbo Talk. How's it going? How's it going? How's everything been going? Obviously, 2020 has been a crazy year, but how are you? How are you? How's the family?
I'm doing good, man. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it. It's been a wild time for all of us. And I've got to say though, my kids are healthy. My wife's healthy. People around me are healthy. I haven't been that affected by COVID. I have a couple buddies that have gotten it, but thankfully nobody's died. So it's a weird time, obviously, for all of us right now, trying to figure out what to read, what to believe, what's true, what's not. I'm just thankful that my family stayed healthy through all this.
Well, Bridget and I were really thankful for you taking the time out. And I want to introduce you to my co-host, Bridget Case. Welcome back. It's good to be back with you, teaming up again. How are you? How you feeling?
I mean, I'm good. Just over here trying to stay alive, you know?
Yeah, stay out the way.
Right?
Yeah, you know, Carson, it's crazy how the conversation is different now. You know, early on when this pandemic first started, there were so many question marks, and obviously there still is, but it's like now it's like, you know, after it's been so much time, it's like, you know, you know someone who's gotten it, you know, now as before it was like, I don't know anybody. I remember having conversations, being on the show, like, listen, I don't know how serious this thing is. I don't know anybody who's gotten it. Now it's like, man, I know three or four or five different people who've gotten it, who have thankfully been able to beat it, and they're healthy now. But I'm sure, you know, it's trying times. Kids are in the house doing school. I'm sure that's been an adjustment for you guys. How's that adjustment been, you know, for you and the family?
It's tough. I'm not gonna lie, especially when I'm having internet problems and one kid can't log on to a Zoom call, one kid's on a Google Meet and their internet's cutting in and out. I feel like everybody's going through that. But as far as COVID, I mean, I don't know what to believe. I like you said, I didn't know anybody that had it. And then over the last probably 4 or 5 months, I've just talked to some buddies that are like, yeah, I got tested. Turns out I had it. I had a headache for a day and that was it. So it's just, you know, it's so odd and wild. And like I said, you don't know where to look and where to research and where to learn, about this virus, just because some of the stuff is political. Some of the stuff, is made up. Some of the stuff is true. You don't really know where to look and who to trust in this time. But as far as just, you know, kids are at the house, they're, you know, school's going on at home. I've never had more respect for teachers. And my mother-in-law was a lifelong teacher. But just myself with helping my four kids through a typical school day, your heart goes out to these teachers, because these teachers are teaching these kids online. They've got their own kids at home, their own lives. They're also, you know, trying to keep up with. Then we've got some teachers in school that are a little bit older, maybe have, some issues with their immune system. So they're living in fear every day going to work. It's just, it takes a special person and a special heart. So I want to give a shout out to all the teachers out there. You truly have all of my respect and all my love, because you guys do an amazing job.
Well, I'm sure they appreciate that. All the listeners who are teaching or who know some teachers, I'm sure, are very appreciative of that. You know, I want to talk about this just a little bit from a sports standpoint. Obviously, NFL quarterback, USC, you know, Heisman winner. Were you concerned about sports you know, in general, particularly the football season. Obviously, we saw the NBA, you know, do the bubble. The MLB was able to have their season. Was it concerning for you to start with? Did you think that we were going to be able to have sports this year?
I thought the football season would get shut down at some point, and it still might. I mean, who knows? All from what I'm reading and seeing right now is the numbers are going up. I just was talking to a Philly radio station this morning, and now the Eagles are no longer letting any fans into their games. So you're kind of, and I feel like it kind of starts on the East Coast as it's getting a little bit colder this time of year and works its way. But, you know, heading into the winter, you know, I can see more stadiums being completely shut down and just having the players and coaches on the field. But I don't know. I mean, you know, once you get away from the game and you have some time to kind of get away, like, you can't wait for Sundays. You can't wait to watch. I know you probably can't wait to watch the Seahawks and buddies you got on other teams. Yeah. I can't wait watching buddies play and watching my Cardinals play. So with all the chaos going around, I just hope we can still have Sundays and Saturdays too to watch college football, because it gives you something. It's kind of like that little carrot dangling out in front of you to get you through the week. You should get to watch football on Saturdays and Sundays.
And it felt like Pac-12 football took forever to get going.
I'm glad they are, though. I mean, yeah. I know a couple games got canceled this past Saturday. You know, I love the game and love watching the games, but also the politics. I'm now seeing coaches starting to call out other programs because they're having a down year and saying they're blaming it on COVID to get out of, you know, affecting their overall and career win-loss record. So it's just, it's crazy and it's wild, but we all love watching football on the weekends, and I hope we still have another couple months of it.
You know, I haven't been able to really talk to anybody specifically. I mean, you know, obviously I've checked in with my guys that are out there on the field, but we haven't talked specifically about how they're feeling about the no fans being in the stands or the limited amount of fans being in the stands. Have you spoke to any current players who are playing right now about that? And if so, you know, what are the responses that you're getting? How are they feeling about the excitement of the game out there?
Well, first off, they all miss the fans. I mean, the fans, as you know, there's nothing like it, especially at your stadium in Seattle. There's nothing like a Sunday home game in Seattle. There's nothing like, you know, a Sunday home game inside the toaster in Arizona, the giant toaster that we called it. But
I never knew it.
It's,
I never knew it was toaster. Called the toaster.
Yeah, funny. I mean, it's a giant toaster. So they absolutely missed it. But from everybody I talked to, the first couple weeks was really eerie, and it was really odd, and it was really uncomfortable, and it was really hard to focus. You know, and that sounds crazy thinking about how hard it is to focus when there's 80,000 people screaming. And then it goes the first couple games where these guys were playing in front of nobody and there was nobody in the stands. They all said, everybody I talked to said it was really eerie. And then you got to like week 4, 5, 6, and it's just, it's football again. And it's the new norm. And they've all adjusted. And I think most of them actually really like playing on the road, at least the quarterbacks that I've talked to, because you can actually communicate and hear yourself think when the home defense is on the field and you're out there as an offense. So I think everybody's just kind of at that point now. They're all pros. They're getting paid. This is the job. This is how you have to perform, and this is the environment you have to perform in, and they're going about their business.
So knowing how you feed off outside energy as a quarterback, how do you think you would be handling this no-fan eeriness atmosphere?
Man, I would love to go on the road and be able to have a conversation like this, because it's so easy to go up to the line of scrimmage and you got five guys in front of you and they can all hear you and you can change the protection from 76 to 65 or two jet to three jet, whatever that is. It's so difficult to communicate. And there's so many, every game I played on the road, there were times where I'd look up at the clock and there's like 8 seconds on the clock. And I know that the perfect play we need to get into, but I know I can't relay the message to all other 10 guys around me because it's so loud within those 8 seconds. Now you can get, you can wait down to the clock gets down to 4 or 5 seconds and totally change the play, and everybody can be on the same page, mm-hmm. and then go out and execute the play. So being a quarterback, I would love it. There is no, there is no disadvantage going on the road right now as a quarterback.
Well, and it's made the mic'd up segments so much more fun because you can hear so much more. Like, I have enjoyed listening to players mic'd up this year more now than ever because you can hear all the back and forth.
Yeah. Sometimes you catch some side action there.
Yeah. You don't want to be watching a game with your 11-year-old son and hear some of the stuff that you and I heard, Rob. But I almost wish they would put the commentators on mute and not even say anything and just put a big microphone right down there in the middle of the field and let us hear everything.
I mean, oh man.
I love that. Oh, I love that idea.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, you know, it's like, if you do that, you'll get teams. They say, you know what, forget watching film on Mondays in our meeting rooms. Let's watch the live game and see what kind of calls we can catch from the other teams. Mm-hmm. Perhaps that'll give us an advantage going forward a little bit, especially off.
Well, that's what I was wondering. It was, you know, about sign stealing and all that kind of stuff, you know, because I heard even just with college football, Dabo Swinney was talking about it. And he's like, listen, like anything that you can do to help us win, it's not cheating. Do you feel like there's a little bit of that going on between teams?
I think so. I think the biggest thing that teams are doing, I know defensive linemen have been doing it for years, is they watch the game copies because they're trying to hear the snap count. And then they'll record the snap count and they'll play it in their meeting rooms and through like a Bluetooth speaker where you just, throughout the week as a defensive lineman, you get so used to hearing Aaron Rodgers' cadence or Drew Brees' cadence over and over. As these defensive linemen, you know, they're at a massive disadvantage. They used to use that to their advantage, especially there in Seattle. I can remember all the years with Cliff Averill and Bennett and all those guys getting off on the ball because it was so loud. Well, now they're at a disadvantage because they don't have the crowd noise.
So do you think overall offense in this particular situation when there's no fans or limited fans, offensively, offenses have the advantage over the defense, or do you feel like it's vice versa?
No, I think the offense, losing offense going into, let's say, CenturyLink Field in Seattle, you're going to have at least 2 false starts strictly because somebody could not hear the quarterback, maybe 3, maybe 4. But it'll be interesting to look at the data, get to the end of the year and see how many less offsides there were, how many more yards the offense gained on the road in 2020 compared to 2019. I think when we go back and look at 2020, the offensive numbers are really going to go up in his offensive games. They could hear, they could talk, they could check out of a bad play and get into the right play against the right defense. So I think it'll be an interesting year to go back and study 2020 versus every other year.
Staying on this topic with the coronavirus, the NFL, playoffs are coming up. We're just a little bit over half of the season now. Playoffs are approaching. There's been some rumbling, some rumors here and there about, hey, perhaps – for the playoffs only, the NFL should do an AFC bubble, an NFC bubble. You know, these playoff teams should be at 2 separate sites. They should play their playoff games under one roof, and then, you know, obviously go to the Super Bowl. What's your opinion on that? Do you feel the NFL, is that something the NFL should consider, or should they just continue to do what it is that they're doing now?
Well, I think if whatever's safest, and I don't really fear for the players. We're talking about some of the best and the best physical specimens on the planet. But I just think back to some of the coaches. Man, you know what I mean? Just think about all the overweight, out of shape coaches you played for. I can't think of many coaches that are young, you know, other than a handful of guys and in great shape. Most of these coaches are in their 50s, 60s, and they just coach. And I just worry about their exposure, all the trainers, you know, all the people working in the stadiums. I think that is my biggest fear. It's not so much the players. But when you talk about putting, you know, all of the AFC and all of the NFC in one building, that's just a lot of people. I mean, every team's got 50-something players, 20-something coaches, 10-something trainers, 10 guys that work in the equipment. I mean, you just think about all the people that it takes to run a football team. Logistically, I just don't know if that works or how that works and how that looks. But again, I mean, it's not these players. These players don't seem to have issues. It's a mild flu for these players that have gotten it. But these coaches that with broken down immune systems and these coaches that are up there in age, those are the ones that I worry about the most.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Rob and I, when COVID like really, you know, cracked down and the NBA was canceled, the NCAA tournament was canceled, Rob and I were in the middle of recording an episode together in person. And it's so funny because our reactions were on camera and our faces just drop, like hearing all of a sudden all of these guys who are getting, you know, diagnosed. And then we're with somebody who, you know, he worked for the Saints. And then all of a sudden Sean Payton gets diagnosed. It was just so surreal because I think initially we forget that sports is that there are bigger things in life than sports. And then all of a sudden things are taken away. I just want to know kind of like where you were at when that happened for you, because Rob and I, our reactions were hilarious, and kind of your initial thoughts.
I mean, I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, and we were sitting here like, yeah, kind of when this first started, you know, going down.
Yeah, I was actually, I was in California. I had just sold a house and I was trying to hire a moving company and nobody could move my furniture. So I had like 3 days before I had to get out of the house, and I had a rental Ford Explorer. And I had to move, my wife and I had to move all of using just a Ford Explorer. And wow. So, I'll never forget that. I was calling all these moving companies. They're like, we don't, COVID-19, you know, we can't, you know, all those issues came up. And I was like, dude, I got like 72 hours to get
everything out. And this is California, of all places. I mean, you know, geez.
It was super strict. So, I had all my TVs down off the walls. I, you know, trying to do that on my own. I'd never done that before. So I didn't have TVs. I didn't have news coverage. I had taken on my routers. I had no Wi-Fi. So I would check updates on my phone to see what was going on, but I couldn't watch CNN and Fox and, you know, all news networks to really see what was going on. And plus I was in 3 days, you know, I was moving couches and beds and all kinds of stuff, using a Ford Explorer, which is not fun. I don't recommend doing that.
That's crazy.
Oh my gosh. The little things we take advantage of.
No, I can only imagine. I mean, that's crazy. And the Ford Explorer is like, is it like a pickup truck, or it's one of those SUV type, right?
No, I had the tailgate up and I was putting couches in and then tying the back end of the couch onto the inside seat belts, hoping that the couch doesn't,
praying that it doesn't fall off on the freeway
on the 405 right now. Yeah, exactly.
Seriously.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. I don't know if you guys have ever done this, but in college I was in between moving apartments and I went to practice because I couldn't get a mattress moved in time. Between like first practice and second practice, I went to practice with my mattress fully on my car and was totally parked in the parking lot. And people are taking pictures because everyone knows it's my car and thinks it's hilarious.
That's a story.
The things we do. It was pretty classic. Yeah.
You know, Carson, I want to get your opinion on a couple things, you know, formerly of the Cincinnati Bengals, and the, Arizona Cardinals, both teams now, have some really good young quarterbacks. Joe Burrow, despite of their record, has been, you know, playing really well in the conversation for Rookie of the Year. And Kyler, obviously, in his second year, right?
Hail Murray.
he's in his second or third year now.
Year two, right?
Yeah. Playing well. He's got a couple really nice weapons. He's got DeAndre Hopkins, who I think is the best receiver in the league, who I think has been the best receiver in the league over the last 5, 6, or 7 years, in my opinion. What are your thoughts? What are your thoughts on Joe and Kyler?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, really, really good young quarterbacks. And he hasn't looked like he struggled at all. They've struggled from a team standpoint, but he's played really, really well. Joe Burrow has been such a pleasant surprise. I mean, I thought he was really good at LSU and I thought he would be a really good pro. I think he's one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the league right now. When you're talking about Aaron and Russell and all these guys, Patrick, I think he's in that group.
Really?
He plays with so much poise. They're awful around, you know, they're not a good team.
Yeah, that's true.
And when you play on a bad team, it's really easy to not play well. So I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, both those organizations are in a great spot with two really good young quarterbacks. And, you know, Arizona is in a totally different financial situation, salary cap-wise, than Cincinnati. I mean, you look at Cincinnati's ability this offseason, and they've got a bunch of money to spend, and they're just not very good around Joe, but they've got a bunch of money to spend to get good around Joe and bring in some vet linemen, maybe another playmaker on offense, maybe a pass rusher, whatever that combination is, salary cap-wise, they're in a really good spot.
So maybe it's building better protection for Burrow on the O-line, or I want to know, who do you think Cincinnati should pick up in the draft this year?
Well, they need linemen. I mean, they need help up front. I really like Joe Mixon, the running back they have. They've got some stuff they got to figure out with AJ. I believe this is his last year. They've drafted his replacement essentially in T. Higgins. Boyd is still a really good player. They need a tight end still. There's a number of routes they can go, and they might find themselves. You know, despite how good Joe has played, they might find themselves in the top three or four picks and be able to deal that, you know, second, third, fourth, fifth pick for a team that has to draft a quarterback and get more picks, because they're still a ways away. And on defense, I mean, you look what they just traded Carlos Dunlap. He went to Seattle. He was really their only real threat pass rush-wise. So, unfortunately for Joe, it's not – draft a guy and sign two free agents. It's we need to draft three or four guys, and they all need to hit, and we need to sign three or four guys in free agency, and they need to be good signings.
Absolutely. I am so impressed, honestly, though, with the Cardinals organization right now, because when they hired Cliff Kingsbury, I don't know, I didn't have that much faith, you know, because he didn't have the, like, best record in the world at Texas Tech. And then, of course, was at USC for like 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. I know that you know him personally. You've had some early encounters at your Senior Bowl back in the day when he was kind of googly-eyed over you.
Yeah.
How's it been to see him have success now at Arizona building that program?
Yeah, a lot of people thought he was undeserving of that position. You know, I'm kind of a fan of First Take. They were talking real bad about Cliff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I like Cliff a lot. Like you said, Cliff and I were on the same team at the Senior Bowl back in 2002, maybe, long time ago. But he had a bunch of success offensively at Texas Tech, and unfortunately was let go there. But what I think is most impressive about what Arizona did is hiring Cliff and going out on a limb and not doing – you know, the sexy, popular hire.
Yes.
They realized they made a bad decision the year before and fired the coach and paid him for 3 more years to not coach and brought in Cliff and paid him a 4 or 5 year contract. So what impresses me is the fact that Arizona's going for it. They're willing to do whatever it takes to win. If that means fire a coach in his first year and hire some young guy from Texas Tech that's never – coached in the NFL and had very mild success in college. I mean, that is a – talk about, you know, putting your chasing a championship. And I saw it firsthand. And playing for a great organization is half of it. I mean, you got to have great players, and players have to make plays. But, Rob, you know, playing for Seattle, when you get an opportunity to play for an organization that knows what they're doing and they're willing to do what it takes to win – you as a player see it and you feel it, and you know you better be on your A game or you're going to get replaced, and you better be doing the right things on and off the field, or they're going to find somebody else because they're willing to cut you and they're willing to, you know, cut a player who has guaranteed money on their contract because that's what's best for the organization. So I'm just happy to see Arizona going all in and chasing a championship.
Yeah, you know, I've always said winning starts from the top down. I mean, you know, it starts from ownership. And it trickles down from there. If you have great ownership, you got a group of guys or a guy or girl who can run their organization with respect and treat everybody a certain way, and then it kind of just trickles down from there, you're likely going to be a successful organization. And you think about the ones that have been consistent throughout all of these years, like the Steelers, you know, I mean, they just, mm-hmm. it's just, they're so successful. They can go 8-8 with somebody who we don't even know playing quarterback because of the way they go about their business each and every day. Certainly a huge deal there. You know, I agree with you about Arizona. They wouldn't got DeAndre Hopkins and they got, Kenyon Drake, to put somebody in the backfield to help out. So, and now they're sitting in first place, tied in the NFC West, which is a really tough division, as you know. It's good to see, them making the right moves, to win a championship. If anybody deserves it, it'd be Larry Fitzgerald. I know somebody that you played with. How was he as a teammate?
Awesome, man. Awesome. Great, great player, obviously. I mean, you just turn the film on and you could see it, but his teammates and his coaches realize the true impact he has on the team because he is there working every single day. Year 15, 16, so I don't even know what year he's in anymore, but he still is a grinder. He takes a day off now. He finally was forced to have a Veterans Day off during the week. I think he misses Wednesday's practice. There which, when I was playing with him, he wouldn't take that,
really?
That day, and I would take it.
Oh, Rob, you're like, the Fitz. Same way.
No, I never took that day.
That's what I couldn't. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Wow. Well, because you play, you're used to it. Yeah, I was used to Marshawn and these guys, taking their. It's like a natural. It's like I don't know. It's just like a natural thing that happens. Got to take care of the body.
That vet day is key, man. That vet, I was telling Fitz when I was playing with him, I'm like, you are tripping. You need to take this vet day. I'm not practicing Wednesday. You should not practice Wednesday. This will add years onto your career.
Yeah.
But he was the first to say, he's like, man, if I don't practice, somebody else can have a great practice. They're going to take my spot. He just always,
yeah.
I think that's one of the things that makes him so great is he has carried that chip on his shoulder, even though he was the, I believe, third pick in the draft in 2005. I mean, he's always felt like he has to perform, he has to practice, he has to work, just because that it's just been ingrained in him, and that's one of the things that's fueled his success over all these years.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Bridge.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think a lot of guys that have entered the league in the last couple of years kind of grew up really idolizing him. And then even when you were still playing, and I think it's so cool when all of a sudden these guys get into the leagues and they get to play with their heroes. Did you ever have a situation like that where you were a little bit starstruck? Like I loved when Tom Brady and Justin Herbert were going up and shaking hands because I was like, that's like, I mean, he could be his dad. And it's just the coolest thing. Did you ever have any moments like that?
I had a moment. I was playing in a Pro Bowl. And it was the year LaDainian Tomlinson won the MVP. Mm-hmm. And I'll never forget it. All week in practice, the Pro Bowl practice is very mellow. I mean, I don't know if I sweat, if I had any sweat at all in any practice. And so you kind of go through the practice and you're playing obviously against the best players. And this is back then, like if you got invited to the Pro Bowl, you went to it. So it was the best players. There wasn't a bunch of alternates playing. And so we finally got to game day and I was in with LaDainian and I handed off a draw to him. So like the quarterback drops back, you hand the ball to the running back and you kind of stand in the pocket like you still have the ball. And I watched him and I was in awe. He was playing at a completely different speed than everybody else on the field. And he had just won the MVP that year. Is that year he went bananas? I don't know how many catches and how many rushing yards he had, but he broke a bunch of records. I think it was the year he broke the touchdown record.
The touchdown record, exactly.
From then on, I did not bootleg the rest of the game. I would turn around, I'd hand the ball, and I just wanted to watch. I didn't want to run my bootleg and miss what he was doing, but it was like everybody was playing in slow motion and he was playing in real time. He was so much quicker and so he had made a comment that he didn't want to get hit. because he was still hurt from the previous year. So he made sure he did not get hit. He had everybody was trying to crush him, and he just was so much quicker and moving at such a different pace than everybody else on the field. That's the only time I've ever witnessed that or ever felt like that in all the years. It was that one game, and I'll never forget. Just, I was a spectator. So I couldn't get the ball out of my hands fast enough and hand it to him because I wanted to watch him.
Mm-hmm. Wow. LT was such a special player. I mean, there's not very many who have played like him. And I was at the game when he was inducted into the Chargers Ring of Honor. And it was so special to see somebody like that, who's also just such a good person off the field, you know, get that honor and have these awards. But I'm always bummed for guys like that who don't get to go win a Super Bowl. What is that feeling like for these guys who are clear Hall of Famers, but they don't get that ring?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, LT does not have a ring, but he had his chances. I mean, those years.
No, Chargers were good. Those early 2000s. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they had their opportunities. I mean, they had some really good teams. They just unfortunately wouldn't pay anybody. I mean, they let Vincent Jackson go.
Yes.
You name it, they let him go. Darren Sproles.
They're so
you can go
cheap.
On and on.
Oh my gosh.
The they wouldn't pay anybody, but they had some runs, and LT had some injuries at some really unfortunate times. I mean, that AFC Championship game, I think he had like two or three touches and was standing on the sideline all game with the knee issue. You know, of all the guys that I think of talent-wise that didn't get a ring, the guy that stands out in my mind more than anybody is Matthew Stafford. I think Matthew Stafford is really,
totally
really
underrated.
Good at playing quarterback.
Wow.
But he probably won't get a Super Bowl. He'll move on. He'll break tons of records. He'll be top five all time. Every single category. The wrong organization. And I think you're right. You might be able to say that about LT, but then you look back at those teams. I mean, those were some 13-3 teams, some 12-4 teams. Those were some good football teams. And he got injured, unfortunately, you know, in the playoffs, and wasn't at full speed in the playoffs. And he was also a little bit older at that point too. He was 28, 29. He wasn't 22, 23, 24 LT. But unfortunately, some guys just don't play for the right organization, and it's unfortunate, and it's part of the deal. You don't get to pick where you're going to play in the NFL like you do in college.
Right, right. Well, speaking of the Pro Bowl and great teammates, I heard a story actually about you. Your first, I believe, Pro Bowl, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but rumor has it that you paid for all of the quarterbacks and their wives to be able to attend the Pro Bowl with you in Hawaii. Is that a true story?
Fact or myth?
Yeah, no, that's a fact. I always made sure. I took really good care of my offensive linemen. Like, I always bought them an awesome Christmas gift. I never let them pay for food or drinks. And I made a deal at the beginning of the year with the quarterback room. Like, if we go to the Pro Bowl this year, we're all going, and your girlfriends and your wives are going too. And so, yeah, I would always make sure I took good care, because those quarterbacks helped me out. All the guys I played with, I was so fortunate. I had a ton of great backups everywhere I was, and they were great. They were awesome, you know, helping me study, helping me game plan, whatever it was during the week. If I asked them to go and do something, I always had a young quarterback that I made sure my locker had certain things in it, and he took good care of me and got us lunch and got us breakfast on Saturdays going to the plane. But yeah, I don't know where I got that tip from. A former quarterback told me, make sure you take care of your offensive line. So I always made sure my offensive lineman had the best gifts in the league and never paid for food or drinks.
So speaking of your quarterbacks, in the Cardinals organization, I've seen some past pictures of you losing a bet and being in a hula skirt and coconuts.
Right,
how did
right,
that stuff right. all happen?
So in 2003, I got drafted to Cincinnati, and John Kitna was the quarterback, before me there. And he was super competitive, and I've always been super competitive. And we would find ways to bet on anything. We had a pool table. We would play pool. We would play ping pong. We would go out and throw footballs into trash cans. We would go out and do contests where we're trying to hit the crossbar of the field goal post from like the 30 or 40 yard line. And so it started there. We always had a bet. We're always betting something. And then as my career moved along, I had the equipment my guys make this really cool trash can that was like up on a pedestal, and you could angle the trash can and throw different touch balls into this trash can. So you could turn the trash can and throw darts into it. You could turn the trash can this way and throw touch balls into it. And so it started as like kind of like a friendly deal. Like whoever wins, you know, the other guy has to buy dinner tonight, whatever that situation was. And then we started getting out of control with it. Like loser has to, there was a pond across from the facility. Loser has to jump in the pond and swim across or whatever it was. It was just stupid stuff. And then it became, well, the loser has to wear this on the plane to the road game, or the loser has to go out pregame on game day in the field and wear this outfit and do some calisthenics or do some jumping jacks. So it just kind of like, it turned into was how can I win this thing and make the other guy look like as big of an idiot as possible? And we did good at that.
The coaches feel about this? I mean, like, it's one thing to like dress up funny at practice or getting on the plane, but you know, during warmups on NFL Sunday.
So we, I won one bet one time, and one of the other quarterbacks, Drew Stanton, who just recently retired this past year, lost. And I bought for the road game to, we were flying to London to play the Rams in London. Uh-huh. I don't know, 14-hour flight, whatever it was. And so that was a big one. You didn't want to lose that one because the loser would have to wear these outfits on the plane. But I found this, I spent like $500 on this. It was a stewardess outfit, like the little hat, the little scarf, the gloves, the little dress,
like a Pan Am type thing.
The little jacket with like the Pan Am with like the little pin you put in it, the little purse. Oh, and so Drew lost and had to dress up like a stewardess to London.
That's amazing.
And so we were there for a week, and we had another competition because we were practicing in London that week before the game on Sunday. And so we had another competition. And the loser of this next one had to wear a Wonder Woman, a full Wonder Woman costume, like a Halloween costume. And so we get to game day, Drew lost again. And I went running out. And right when I go running out, I see Michael Bidwell, the owner of the Cardinals, Bruce Arians, the head coach, and Steve Keim, the general manager, all out on the field. Like, they're never out there at this time. We know this is normally when we do our thing because we know they're not out there.
Right.
And so Drew, I run out. And I'm like, screw it, let's just go. And I didn't tell Drew that these three guys, the three guys that really run the organization, are right out there. And Drew comes running out in a Wonder Woman, full cape, the skirt, the tights, the whole deal.
Oh, man.
And he goes out, he does a lap around the field. He does 20 or 30 yards of calisthenics and push-ups and all kinds of stuff and runs back in the locker room. And I am running back in the locker room like 20 yards behind him. And Michael Bidwell and Bruce both walk right up to me, and I'm just kind of waiting to hear it. And Michael looks at me and goes, man, that's the best costume yet. Good job. And I was like, yes. I thought for sure I was going to get in trouble, and they were all cool with it. So from then on, it was, you know, we got real out of control after that. And that's when you saw the coconut shells and the hula skirts and all that.
Oh, I love that.
Hey, you give us a little bit, we'll take a lot, right?
Exactly. They could have shut it down real easy. They didn't, right. So we kept it rolling.
That's funny. I wanted to ask about this. You know, we were talking about some stuff regarding the playoffs, the bubble. They added a team to each conference this year. They're going to go seven teams in the playoff. And I think they just agreed on something, Bridge. You guys can correct me if I'm wrong. I think they're going to even do eight teams per conference. For next year, depending on the status with COVID, right? Is that correct? How do you feel about that? How do you feel about adding teams to the playoffs? Obviously, from a revenue standpoint, from a business standpoint, it's beneficial to the NFL. But just from a football standpoint in particular, what's your opinion on that?
I just don't like changing what we got going. It's a great system. It's been working really, really well for as long as we can think of. But, you know, at the end of the day, you're judged off of playoff appearances and playoff wins, Super Bowls. And so it's definitely giving more people access to add those to their resumes. You know, at the end of the day, I think it's a wash because it just gives two more teams the opportunity to collect game check, which is big. Those are fantastic for 53 guys on every team. So it gives guys another opportunity, but those checks that those individual players get for that one extra game is nothing compared to what the owners are making on that one game. So I think it's kind of a wash. I mean, it's a great opportunity for guys to make one more game and collect one more check. But that's where the NFL makes their money. Is they make their money on the playoffs because they're not paying the players what they would in the regular season. They're paying them much, much less. So it's obviously a big revenue pickup for the owners. So, I mean, I'm indifferent on it, I guess. I mean, that's a terrible answer. I bounced around all over the place on it. But it's good because guys get more access and more opportunity. But there's one reason that those owners are adding that. And they're adding it because they're making a bunch of money on that game.
Yeah. You know, I personally agree with you, Cars. I mean, listen, when I first heard about it, I was like, man, you're going to give another team an opportunity to make the playoffs, add that to their resume when they may not really be deserving, you know, of that. Are we going to be allowing now teams that are, you know, I mean, you're 8-8 and you're 50%, you know, you're 500. That's cool. You know what I mean? But are we going to get into this phase like the Eastern Conference or the NBA where teams are constantly making the playoffs at 38-42? You know, we're going to constantly be having these 7-9, you know, teams that it's looking like that in the NFC East.
I was just going to say a losing team is definitely going to the playoffs.
But are we going to all of a sudden just allow consistently now, you know, bad teams, I guess, you know, non-qualified playoff teams to be in the playoffs every year? I didn't agree with it. I was like, you know, it's great for the players. I mean, like, if I'm in that situation as a player, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, man, we got that seventh spot. Woo, extra check. Obviously, there's a lot of positives to it. But at the same time, you want it to be hard. This is football. You want it to be hard to be able to get into that spot.
I don't want to watch a 7-9 team or a 6-10 team play in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The playoffs, to me, that's what separates the NFL from everybody else is when you watch the NFL playoffs, you're watching the best of the best. When you watch the NBA playoffs, you're like, man, let's hurry up and get this 5-game series over with. We know the Heat are going to crush.
Even during the World Series this year.
Right.
Yeah. I don't want to watch that. Now that I'm a fan, I want to watch the best play against the best when it comes to January football and watching playoff football. You're going to dilute that a little bit. If you add one more team in each conference to that playoff scenario, you're diluting the product. And I wish, now that I think about it more, I wish they wouldn't do that. I know it's a great opportunity for guys' resumes and for guys' checkbooks, but I think you're right. I think the playoffs in the NFL is the best of the best. It's what we've been waiting for all regular season long. And now we're adding another team and it's turning into like the baseball. What was the baseball thing they did?
It was so many teams in the wild card round. It was overwhelming and exhausting.
Yeah. Couldn't even keep up with it.
Yeah.
And the other thing too that I think about, Cars, from a player standpoint is you add two teams to each conference, maybe even another next year, which what then pushes back the Super Bowl game, which shortens an already short off season for players. I mean, it makes it even shorter. We got to come back in April, you know, for OTAs. I mean, no time to really recover and recoup and train the body for the following season. And we're talking about player health. I just don't really know how it coincides with one another.
No, that's a great point. I mean, you look at what just happened in the NBA and what LeBron's been talking about. LeBron's like, I got to go back and start and play in December now. I just got out of the bubble.
Yeah.
You're right. I mean, that offseason is crucial. That offseason is so important. I've had, through my 15 years, I had two offseasons where I needed more time. I was not able, by the time OTA started, I was still recovering from an issue of the 16 games I had played the previous season. Sometimes, and that definitely is a bigger factor for the players that are 28, 29, 30 and up. Not so much for year two, year three, year four guys, because those guys can recover and your body at that age just naturally recovers better. But yeah, I mean, you're right. If you push the Super Bowl into the second or third week of February because you've added games in the playoffs, you are shortening down that window. And it'll be interesting to see how things pan out, because the NFLPA is constantly fighting with the league about player safety, mm-hmm. about, you know, there's stuff that comes up. Is the turf good enough in the stadiums in Mexico? Is it safe enough for their heads to be landing on? Is the offseason too long as it is right now? Is the offseason too short? Are workouts and, you know, all the different things that come up. The good news is the NFL players have the NFLPA fighting for them, and hopefully they get this resolved, because, man, that offseason is so nice. You know, I mean, it is so nice when you get to it. I got older, it got shorter and shorter and shorter. And I had more offseason at 36 and 37 than I did when I was 26 and 27.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely.
I bet that first year of retirement was just a nice break, I'm assuming, before it really set in.
Oh, man, I did, like, that, another reason that I wanted to retire is I love to hunt and fish, and hunting season is the fall.
Okay.
And so I had planned, like, all right, when I retire, I'm going to go on this hunt and I'm going to go on this fishing trip. And I experienced a bunch of stuff that I wanted to experience, but I couldn't because I was playing. Yeah. And I brought my son, my oldest boy, with me on a couple of them. And I had a really, really good first year. And I must admit, I'm really good at retirement. I am acing it.
Like the MVP of retirement. No, I love that, because some guys, I think, really struggle with figuring out, okay, what's next? But I mean, I think that just goes with, like, personality type. I don't know.
Were you able to walk away on your own volition? You said, you know, this is it for me. Hey, we'd like for you to come back another year. And you're just like, you know what? I'm good.
Well, and you and Bruce Arians walked away at the same time, right?
We did. Yeah, we did. He was retiring at that point for some health issues. And I was kind of retiring for some health issues, too. But no, I was, I knew it was it. You know, I could have played one more. I still had a year left on my contract and they would have had me back, but I went in and up to the offices and talked to the organization and just told them, man, it's been a dream to play for the Cardinals and I thank you for it, but it's time to move on to what's next. So I did not have a big, issue with it. I did have an issue with what's next. It's taken me a while to figure that out. But I wasn't in a rush. I wasn't in a hurry. And, you know, I still think I'm young. I'm 40 now. And I hope I have a lot of life left in front of me, but it was time. When I walked away, it was time for me to go.
40 is the new 60. Or no, 60. Oh my gosh. No. 60 is the new 40. That's what I meant.
I
meant 60 is the new 40. You know what I'm saying. So you got time. So you're basically like 20 right now.
I feel like I'm 60, but but I would love to be 20 again. I'd love to do it all over again. I had a blast. But yeah, 60 is the new 40. I haven't heard that one yet. Yeah, we'll see if we can get some traction on that.
Okay, speaking of your early 20s, I want to go back to that time where you played with Cliff Kingsbury in the Senior Bowl. And I heard about a situation where there were some kegs set up or something and guys were not wanting to go drink it and you guys were kind of on the same page. I don't know. I want to know the story and how you guys connected there.
Yeah, I think I think at the hotel, like in the meal room, there was some kegs or there were some beers out.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I mean, I like to drink beer. I enjoy drinking beer. And back then, like, you could have a beer on a Wednesday uh-huh. or two and not feel like you're going to pull a muscle on Sunday. When I got into my, you know, 14th, 15th year, I couldn't have a beer after a game on Sunday without feeling dehydrated and feeling like I'm going to rip a hamstring in half on Thursday's practice. So yeah, I mean, I'm sure Cliff and I had a couple beers and talked shop back in the day, but I just remember him. He was just a cool guy, just a mellow guy from Texas. Had an amazing collegiate career. Knew the offense before we even checked into the hotel. It seemed like there's some guys you play with that you're like, that guy's a coach. And there's some guys that you play with, you're
so
like,
you saw it.
That guy can't be a coach. That guy needs to go and find a new job. Or that guy, you know, there's some guys you can tell. And Cliff, right away, you can just, that guy's a coach. I don't know. He's wasting his time playing football. He needs to go right into coaching. So you could see it from day one.
Wow. And it's crazy because he had the same kind of respect for you as a player. I know just hearing everything was like, he was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm here with Carson Palmer, like Heisman winner. You know, I think guys, it's just interesting. Like they always say, if you can't coach, you can play. You can play, you can't coach. Whatever. I don't know, but I don't know. So I'm just analyzing that in my own head. Like he probably was so freaking excited to be around you, and that probably inspired him to go into coaching to be around guys like you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what his goals were from a player standpoint. I think he's from a family of coaches though. I want to say his old man was a coach or a high school coach. You can get fooled by that. And some were players and some never even played high school football, but the best coaches were great teachers. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's so much better to be a teacher than it is a coach. Cause a coach can go out there and blow his whistle and yell and scream and tell you to do pushups and all that. But a teacher can relay the message to me, to Robert, to a rookie, to a 20, you know, an 18 year vet in a way that each one of us understands it and can absorb it and then knows it. And so they're great coaches are not a dime a dozen. They are hard to find. It is hard. It's one thing to know the game and know your X's and O's and understand protections and understand how to beat a defense. But if you can't relay that message to the player and teach that to the player in a way that it hits the player's mind the right way, because we all learn things different. Some of us are visual learners. Some of us need to experience to learn. And so the greatest coaches and the greatest teachers, the ones that identify within a player how they need to be taught and how they need to learn a certain concept, and then can relay that message in a way that it just hits their brain the right way. And it's a gift. It's just like being, you know, a receiver that runs 4.3. That's a gift. It's just like being a quarterback that can throw the ball accurately all over the field. That is a gift. Mm-hmm. Being a great coach is a gift.
So one of the best coaches, I would say, in the game you've played under, and so has Rob, Pete Carroll. I want to talk about him and the beginning of his era at USC. I want to know your experience, and then Rob, go to you, what your experience was like playing for him in Seattle.
Yeah, I loved him. I mean, he was such a great motivator, really, really smart. He always kind of had the right thing to say at the right time, but didn't overtalk. You know, some coaches get up in front of the team room and they're excited that they're finally the head coach, and they want to talk for like 20 minutes. And Pete always seemed to deliver the right message in the right amount of time. Cause we all football players, we're like 12-year-olds. Our mind's all over the place, and you lose us after that 5 or 6 minutes and our mind's on to something else. Mm-hmm. And Pete always seemed just to have the right thing to say at the right time. He always motivated, and he's always been really, really smart and really understood offensive schemes and personnel groups, and was great at protections and breaking down protections. So he was really smart from the X's and O's side. But he was always a great motivator for me. He could always get me up, fire me up, and get me going, and didn't lose me with just like verbal diarrhea.
Right.
You know, there's so many coaches that they you talk for 15 minutes and I picked up like 35 seconds of what you said. But Pete wasn't like that. Pete and Bruce Arians was the same way. He delivered his point, he delivered his message, and it was on to the next thing. And I think great coaches find a way to do that.
Rob?
Yeah, no, I second that. I mean, he obviously is a great motivator. Everybody knows he's a high-energy coach, even in his older age. It's almost like he's the same age as he was at USC. But
hair's just a little grayer.
Yeah, just a little bit, but super intelligent. You know, like, I mean, X's and O's, I mean, it's like, wow. You know, he knows so much football. He's learned from so many other great coaches, and he's been able to incorporate that in his coaching. And, you know, I'd love to play for him. Mm-hmm. You know, I still want to play for him. And so, yeah, certainly a great coach.
Well, and you love hearing that because so many guys these days are outspoken about issues within the organization or issues with a coach, and then you see him get fired or whatever it may be. So it's almost like that's becoming more rare. I don't know, just as an outsider perspective.
Well, it's very rare to hear anything negative about Coach Carroll.
Right.
You know, that's for sure. You know, I haven't heard too many people say anything bad about Coach Carroll. He's, you know, like Carson said, man, he always knows what to say. And he's quick and to the point. He's huge on having, like, guest speakers come and speak to your team. These guys who are just really dynamic and have incredible stories. Mm-hmm. And you sit there and it's like, wow, you know, this is a spectacular person with such an incredible story that a lot of us can relate to in so many different ways. And it's just another way that he found to inspire his players. And so certainly a great coach to play for. Yeah, I wasn't sure, Carson, if he coached you or not, if you were maybe a little bit before his time or not. So that's good to know.
Yeah.
Obviously led you and helped you get to a Heisman award. How was that experience?
Yeah, he was the head coach my junior and senior year.
Okay.
And you know, another thing on Pete too is his ego never got in the way. You're talking about guest speakers and having different people always coming in and talking to the team. And, you know, so many head coaches just love that platform. Mm-hmm. And, well, all they need to hear from is me. It's just, I've got enough to motivate everybody in that, you know, I'm the head coach. They shouldn't be hearing from other people, but Pete was always so open to bringing in. I mean, we had, you know, from retired Navy SEALs,
wow. Yep.
To yeah. like Will Ferrell.
Yep.
You know, a comedian slash actor slash Hollywood movie star. I mean, but you always got something from it. And,
yes, you did.
You know, this Navy SEAL can come in and talk about this much stuff, but you got something from it. And it was really good. And it was something you can use and something you can implement. Will Ferrell came in and talked about all this crazy stuff, but there was one little thing he talked. So he always, it was very diverse in who he would bring and what backgrounds they would come in and talk to the team about. But Pete removed himself and his ego didn't get in the way. He had the mindset that my players need to learn from me. They need to learn from my coaches. They need to learn from outsiders.
Mm-hmm.
And he was just awesome. He was the head coach my last 2 years, and my senior year we won the Heisman and it was an awesome experience. I mean, that was my first time to go to New York.
Yeah.
I got to go to New York for like 3 nights. They put us up at some nice hotel down in Times Square. And I was the full-on tourist with the camera around my neck, taking pictures of everything and
that's awesome.
Running around New York City. But yeah, I mean, that was a special year. Just a great, I mean, you only get to play on a handful, if you're lucky, great teams.
Mm-hmm.
And, I played on some really good teams and I played on some really bad teams, but that was one of the few great teams I played on where it wasn't chock full of NFL guys. There was a handful of guys that made it to the NFL and a whole bunch of guys that didn't, but just great leaders, great men, guys that today are firefighters and bankers and great fathers and great husbands and great friends and coaches. And so I was just that my senior year was a really special team. It was a really great group of guys that had been through some we've been through coaches that got fired, some really bad teams, and we came together and had one great season together.
Where's your go ahead, Bridge.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I heard your Heisman's not with you. Is that still true?
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually in wherever Dan Patrick's studio is, probably in New York.
Okay.
I forgot about that.
Is there a reason?
I lent that to him pre-COVID, yes, and he hasn't reached out to me about sending that back.
I was wondering how long, was that a loan? You know, how did that happen?
Good question. he put me on the spot. I was on the show talking about football, and he put me on the spot, and I was like, I think at the time it was in a storage unit in Idaho, and I don't have a bunch of football stuff in my, I don't have any football stuff in my office. But yeah, I forgot about that. Thanks for, I need to reach out to Dan and see what's up with that.
Glad I could
that
remind you.
That was pre-COVID, and then COVID happened. And
I just think it's hilarious. I just think it's awesome because, you know, it doesn't matter either way, like what you like, but there are some guys that get on all these Zoom calls and, you know, they've got all of their accolades and trophies behind them. And I thought it was hilarious that yours is with somebody else.
Yeah. I hope he still has it. I mean, who knows what with,
sold it,
you know. I need to reach out to him and see what's up with that. He was supposed to send that back.
Question though, being a fellow Trojan, do you think that Reggie Bush should get his Heisman back?
Yes, absolutely.
I agree.
Me too.
I played with so many guys that I'm not going to say any teams that received a lot more than Reggie received. Mm-hmm. I play with a lot of guys that have some crazy stories about a conference that's in the southern eastern part of this country that
wonder where that's at.
That made a lot of money in college and drove really nice cars and had really nice condos downtown. So I just think, you know, being Reggie being in LA, you got UCLA right there. Mm-hmm. You got a ton of Oregon Ducks in the area. You got, you know, Washington Huskies in the area. I think there was a lot of eyes looking for something and unfortunately, you know, he received some stuff, but I'm just saying I play with a lot of guys that received a lot more that were like left tackles and defensive tackles. And aside from the quarterbacks and the running backs and the best, probably one of the best college football running backs that I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Ever. Yeah.
So I think he should get his Heisman back for sure.
I 100% agree. I think it's ridiculous. And especially because he has been so humble about it and such a good sport about it. Because I think, I believe he voluntarily gave it back initially, right?
I don't know. I just think, he worked his butt off for that award. And he performed when he needed to perform. And it's hard to do. Mm-hmm. And under the microscope and in that spotlight in LA, and especially now if they're going to start paying guys now.
Right. Exactly. Come on.
Right.
I mean, I lived in, and I know what it's like for Reggie. I lived in a,
too.
Yeah. I lived in a dump apartment that my stipend check that I got once a month barely paid our rent.
And if you've not, if you guys haven't been to the USC campus, it's not the safest area. So there's also that.
It's not super. Oh no, I lived in the hood. I lived right. We had the Rolling 20 and then the next street over, but they all took care of us. I lived in a house with a bunch of football players and Matt Castle was my roommate. So I was splitting a room, barely able to afford rent, barely able to afford food. And food in LA is expensive. Everything in LA is expensive.
Everything.
And we lived in the hood. We lived in a bad spot, but the gang members that lived around us respected us and they watched out. Our house never got broken into. Our cars never got broken into. Our bikes never got stolen. So we lived in a bad area and barely got by on our rent checks.
But they weren't going to touch you.
You know, one of my favorite.
They were all cool with us.
One of my favorite college games of all time, and it's a classic, is the USC Texas game with, you know, Reggie Bush and Vince Young. You know, what from the college level or the pro level, either one, you know, what's one of your favorite all time games that you've been a part of?
Ooh, one of my favorite games for me personally was. It was probably my second year in the league. We went to Baltimore. And back then, when I first got in the league in the early 2000s, it was Baltimore and Pittsburgh. And those were the two best organizations. They were the two best. Every year they were number one and number two in defense. You had Ray Lewis. You had, I mean, you can go on and on about all the players they had. Ed Reed and Starks and McAllister and just all the guys they had on that defense. And we were the Bengals and we were bad. But we were starting to come around. Like we were starting to play better. I was a young quarterback making mistakes. And we got to Baltimore. And by the way, one of my favorite places to play. It's such a cool stadium. Such a cool environment. They have a band. It's like you're back in college.
That was
great
gonna be
fans.
My next question.
Great stadium downtown. And we were going back and forth with them all game. And they took a lead, and we ended up scoring, I think, 21 points in the fourth quarter to go on the road and beat Baltimore. Wow. And we put up big numbers on offense, and nobody had done that in a long time because that defense was really salty. And that was kind of like my welcome, like, oh, I can do this.
Yeah.
Like, I can be down 21 points in the fourth quarter against the number one pass defense, run defense, and defense against total yardage, and throw us into a win. So that was like one of my first, like, because you never know. It doesn't matter where, if you're drafted first or you're drafted last, you're like, can I do it? Can I? Mm-hmm. I think I can. And I believe in myself, but I need to do it to prove to myself. And so that was probably my favorite game because it ended with zone, and I threw a touchdown to Chad Johnson for the win. The stadium was so loud and so intense to completely quiet. We didn't have any fans there. All Baltimore, and it just went from so loud to boom, like instant silence. And the fans were shocked. But Baltimore, all right, I can do this. I can go into the best and play against the best and beat them. Like, I that was probably my favorite and welcome to the NFL moment.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about before you got to USC. There are so many quarterbacks that Orange County has produced, sent to USC. You know, you, Mark Sanchez, Matt Leinart. It's insane. And then I feel like that lineage just kind of stopped. What are your thoughts on kind of like high school recruiting now and how the Pac-12 is recruiting and how these guys are faring in the NFL?
Yeah. I mean, Sam Darnold isn't that old yet.
No, like, but he's injured. It sucks.
I know.
He's from Orange County.
He's really good.
Yeah. He's from San Clemente. Yeah, no, he's amazing, absolutely.
But it's like you said, you know, it's the organization a lot of times.
Exactly,
you know?
Like, look at the Jets.
His situation, what is he supposed to do?
It's a mess. I mean, they're just not good. They haven't the Jets have messed up more than they've done well on so many different deals throughout the years. And, you know, this hiring Adam Gase, who now they're going to have to fire, and I just don't trust them to hire the right guy the next time.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, Orange County, there's so much competition. Mm-hmm. There's so many great coaches. You can play football. Those kids play football year round now. They're doing passing leagues during COVID.
Totally.
I mean, it doesn't stop. So I also think that just high school sports in general has been so focused on one individual sport that guys are able to play football all year long, whether it be their football season in the fall, into weight training in the winter or the late winter, and then doing spring or up until training camp starts for their next year of high school football. So, you know, I was playing basketball.
I was going to say, I was going to ask you about that, Carson, because it's really interesting because it's like, how do you feel about, I mean, obviously you can do what you want, but it's like, when I was coming up, it was like, you know, football, then you played basketball, then you played baseball. I mean, you know, you got yourself involved in other sports. And obviously, like, you know, in your latter days as a high school kid, eventually you had to pick one to kind of gravitate towards so you can hone in and lock in on it. But do you feel kids should still, you know, be versatile and engage in different sports instead of just focusing on just one?
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. I don't think it's good for kids to be so singularly focused.
Well,
on
and speaking
one sport.
Of an Orange County USC guy, look at Todd Marinovich. Like, look how that worked out.
I don't even know who that is.
Yeah.
Well,
I just kind of to that point,
that mentality.
Oh yeah.
Of doing one thing.
Yeah, I played basketball. I played baseball. I played soccer. I played golf. There was no video game. My parents didn't have video games in the house. We didn't have computers. Right. I was outside. Yeah. I grew up outside playing sports all year round, and I loved playing high school basketball. And I think that made me a better football player. Working on dribbling, learning a different sport, learning. We're getting too singularly focused on our kids. My kid needs to get a scholarship for soccer, and he's going to have four different coaches and two different, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. I just don't think it's healthy. I don't think it's good. I think it's good. My kids are playing every sport. If they want to pick up a tennis racket or a croquet, a lacrosse stick, whatever. The more you can play, the more you can have experiences in different sports and different teams. Their skills. I mean, if I just did football throughout high school, I wouldn't have picked up some of the skills I picked up. I played for a great high school basketball coach, and our team went on and won CIF and state championships and all kinds of stuff. And I picked up a ton of stuff from those coaches during that season. So I don't agree that you need to singularly focus on one sport at a young age.
Did Clay Thompson play for Santa Margarita? Was it him?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So good guy.
One of our listeners wants to know if you can dunk, or at least used to be able to dunk.
But
I'm looking at the chat right here.
But can you dunk?
Yeah, he's like, but can you dunk?
Huh? But I used to be able to dunk back in the day.
Okay.
So that's a yes.
I want to get back to football just a little bit. Talking about quarterbacks, we've talked about Joe. As we kind of get to the end here of the show, and we've talked about Kyler. Mm-hmm. We didn't get too much into Tua or Justin Herbert just yet, but I'm sure you're high on those guys as well. But getting to some of the veteran guys and this MVP conversation, which is always a huge conversation every year. Looked like Russell was certainly the front runner so far this season. But looks like, Seattle is taking a little bit of a step back, and perhaps he's not the front runner anymore. In your opinion, who is the MVP so far this season? And in making that choice, how do you make that choice? I know everybody kind of has their different either stats and where they go by their team or it's, whatever. But who's your midseason MVP and why?
That's a good question. I still think Russ is the best player in the league, and I know they're struggling, and they can't stop anybody on offense, and they've couple L's finding a way. He's magical. He finds a way to get it done in these games. And as we get into late November and into December, I think you're going to see Russ play his best football, and I think he'll end up being MVP.
Somebody said, I'm tired of watching Russ have to run for his life every single game.
for a number of years, though, by the way. Not just this year. But, sometimes – and you can speak for this, Carson. Sometimes when your team – I mean, when you're still winning, but your team has holes and you're struggling. And when you have so much talent, when you're the leader of the team as a quarterback, sometimes you get into the space where perhaps you're just trying to do a little bit too much, and it backfires on you. True?
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about Joe Burrow earlier, and that's one of the things that impresses me is when you're on a really easy to make bad decisions. It's really easy to and some of these young quarterbacks, you see it happen. You see the season – ball pressure mounting, and you see some decisions they make inside the pocket, outside the pocket that they shouldn't have made, and some balls thrown that they shouldn't have. But these veterans and guys like Russ who don't do that, and that's when that's COVID. That's just these teams aren't firing on all cylinders right now. They will come December, because that's when they're going to have had that time on task with those individual players and really start to figure themselves out. Those coaching staffs will have really figured out what their team does well, what their team stinks at. So this is all COVID related. We're seeing, the ups and downs of some of these teams just because they don't have the experience with each other that we've seen them have in the previous seasons because of COVID.
Yeah. So then real quick, absolutely, what's your Super Bowl prediction? I know it's a little bit tough because everyone's in their, same in a weird tier this year. There seems to really not be a major front runner.
Well, I think
I think in the AFC we're going to see the Steelers, mm-hmm.
and the Super Bowl?
NFC is a crapshoot. Yeah,
you got the Steelers beating the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game to go to the Super Bowl.
I don't think Chiefs are as solid as last year.
I'm worried about the Chiefs. I like the Steelers. What? If the Steelers stay healthy,
Justin Herbert almost beat the Chiefs in his first NFL start.
Oh, give me a break.
The Chiefs lost to the Raiders.
And that, exactly.
The Raiders are 6-3, arguably.
I know, but that's an inflated. That's not a real 6-3.
The Raiders the Chargers is not a real 2-7.
9-7.
I agree with that. But I don't know, man.
So what is your prediction? Sorry, who on the NFC side?
Oh yeah.
NFC is a crapshoot. I mean, it could be one of many teams, but I'll go with Seattle.
Okay.
I think Seattle will find a way to get there. They'll find just enough offense to get past that bad defense.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree, except for the AFC side. I think Seattle finds a way to sneak into that Super Bowl game. But I think the Chiefs go back. You know, they're going to see the Steelers in that AFC Championship game, but I think they just have a little bit more than the Steelers.
Yeah, I like Pittsburgh's defense. If there's one defense that can slow down Kansas City, I mean, you got two pass rushers. You got Bud Dupree. You got T.J. Watt. You got speed at the linebacker position. And then that secondary, I mean, Joe Hayden, people forget, yeah. Joe Hayden can flat cover. Joe Hayden can flat play. But you just feel like he's kind of got forgotten about. He got kind of exiled out of Cleveland. Yeah. He's still playing really, really good football. You got another playmaker in the middle of the field. I'm blanking on his name, but Minkah Fitzpatrick from Alabama. Fitzpatrick.
Yep.
If there's a defense that can slow down Mahomes and the weapons he has, I think it's Pittsburgh. Especially, you catch a weird weather game late in December, early January.
Good point.
You catch some real wild wind and snow or rain or something, and it could be in Kansas City, it could be in Pittsburgh, and I think Pittsburgh might be able to get them.
That's a great point. Not to mention, you know, we always hear this comparison about, you know, Pat Mahomes, you know, having Andy Reid, who's such a fantastic coach, but on the other side of that, Mike Tomlin is just as exceptional, if not more, of a coach, and definitely as we've seen.
I wish I could wear aviator prepared. Glasses as well as Mike Tomlin does.
He's the coolest cat on the sideline every
so
time
cool.
he steps on. I mean,
he's chilling, right?
Everybody loves playing for him. He, I mean, again, we're going back. We're talking about the same thing. Organizations. That is a great organization. That organization knows what they're doing. And they've been doing it for decades. Back when they hired Mike, everybody's like, who is this guy? He's a special teams coach from Minnesota. Nobody had ever heard of him. And he turns out he's been there for probably 10 plus years now, 14 years, something like that. I mean, they seem to have figured out how to run a franchise better than just about anybody in the NFL.
You know, before the show started, you mentioned the Fill the Stadium initiative. Want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so Fill the Stadium is you can follow it on Fill the Stadium on Instagram, on Twitter, fillthestadium.com online, and it's a part of Compassion International. Compassion International is a foundation that supports disadvantaged kids all over the planet. Kids that don't have clothes, that don't have food, that don't have water, that don't have a mom or dad. Mm-hmm. Compassion has started an organization where you can log on and my family's done it, where you essentially through the website can adopt a child for $38 a month and pay for the child to have clothing, have food, have shelter, have schooling, and also learn about who God is and what the Bible is and what the Bible says.
Wow.
And COVID hit and all these kids that have been getting adopted through, for instance, Hillsong United. Hillsong's a group, a worship group that travels the country and tours, and they teach people on tour stops and find people to give money to Compassion. Well, concerts stopped, So all those kids got lost in the shuffle. Compassion also advertises on Sundays at church, local community churches, where families that are at church can see what Compassion's doing and adopt a child. Well, church services stopped. We weren't allowed to go to church. So there's all these kids that have fallen through the cracks, and kids that typically in years prior would get adopted and get families to pay for that, all those things that come up. And all of a sudden the NFL season started and nobody was in stadiums. And now it looks like more stadiums are being shut down to fans. And so the idea came up of fill the stadium. There's a 70,000 person stadium that is sitting empty. And if we can spread the word about Compassion, we can fill up that stadium with children that we can adopt. And the concept basically is it costs about $500 for a family of four to go to a game on Sunday, which is a ton of money. Parking, tickets, buying soft pretzels and Cokes and hot dogs and all that.
Yeah.
And because we as football fans aren't spending that $500 on a football game, if you take that $500, that $500 can sustain one child that has nothing, that lives in extreme poverty for an entire year. That $500 can pay for that child's food, that child's water, schooling, and clothing, shelter. And so $500, that's what it costs for a family of four essentially to go to an NFL football game on one Saturday. But that $500 can sustain a child that has, like I said, nothing for an entire year. So anyways, it's called Fill the Stadium. We're trying to fill the stadium and adopt 70,000 kids, essentially virtually putting them in a seat in that stadium. And we're at 18,000 kids that have been adopted with the Fill the Stadium initiative. So we're trying to reach 70,000 children. We're trying to find 70,000 seats for these kids. And again, it's $500. $500 is a lot of money, but it pays for a child for an entire year that, you know, is in as dire of a situation as you could possibly imagine. And you can go on CompassionInternational.com. And I did it with my kids. You can go on, you can log on. My kids each picked a child. My daughters picked, they sponsored a couple different little girls each, but just off of their names. My two sons wanted to pick certain children to adopt in certain countries. So you can go on, you can, kids write letters, they're pen pals.
This is international as well.
Well, it's all over the world. It's all over the world. Yeah, it's, there's some kids because of COVID. I was just on a Zoom call earlier and one of the guys that helps run, Ken McKinley, had a statement. He said, we went from supporting children that were hungry to now we're trying to support children that are starving to death. These kids are starving to death. There is no food. There is no food banks. They don't have money. They don't have parents. They're in the foster system and their countries aren't doing anything to take care of them. So what's great about Compassion is it's a massive organization. It has a long history of success. Of the money that you donate goes directly to those kids, not 20% goes to the kids and then 80% goes to fund a bunch of different people's payrolls. That money goes to these children. So you can sign up and sponsor a child for $38 a month. You can follow us on Instagram and on Twitter. You can go to fillthestadium.com. And for $500, like I said, you can pay for a child to survive and get through one more year in a dire, dire situation.
That is so incredible. We'll definitely include the link to that in the episode show notes so you guys can go check it out easily. Because that's something that's so simple for people to do. And I think especially the way our country's been going recently, like looking at positive things like that where we can help each other out is just really, really powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know. I really appreciate you sharing that. Is there a certain, you know, what kind of made you want to get involved with Compassion? Is there anything specific?
Yeah, I had pre-COVID, I had set up a mission trip for my family to go on to go to Argentina and spend time with these kids in this orphanage, bring my kids and share the gospel of God, teach these kids who God is, and just we didn't even know what we were doing. We were going to go in, we were going to dig a well for some so they could have fresh water. We were going to build some houses, and then COVID hit and everything stopped, obviously. So that mission trip got canceled. And I had been talking with a couple guys that worked for Compassion, a guy named Ken McKinley and then Steve Stenstrom, who's the head of PAO, former Stanford football player, quarterback, played in the NFL, and now is the CEO of Professional Athletes Outreach. And I had reached out to him about this mission trip, and he had set me up. He's like, my kids have done it. Here's who you need to talk to. Here's what you need to do. It's amazing. It'll change your kids' lives. You're going to change kids' lives on the other end. And then COVID hit, and he and I had been talking, and he's like, man, all these kids aren't going to get adopted. All the revenue generated from, pre-COVID, now that COVID's hit and there aren't these concert venues and there aren't all these avenues for these kids to get adopted, these kids aren't going to get adopted. There's going to be a lot of children that they've been relying on money from Compassion to pay for their water, to pay for their food, to pay for their school, their shelter, and it's just stopped just like that. It dried up just because of COVID. And so wow. They had been trying to figure out a way for all these forgotten children to be adopted and came up with the concept of Fill the Stadium.
Wow.
That's awesome. That's really awesome. Well, we really appreciate your time. Thanks for, taking the time out to come on our show. I appreciate all of our listeners and our viewers. I did have one last question in my back pocket, but, due to time constraints, I know you got to get going at 1 o'clock. I really just wanted to know, I'm always interested in, you mentioned you play different sports, and I'm always interested in, how did football come about to be the number one choice? Was it always your dream to play in the NFL? If you want to answer that real quick,
I always loved it. I just gravitated towards it. I loved the physical aspect of it. I loved throwing things. I grew up, all I used to do is skip rocks. I used to go down to the reservoir where I lived in Fresno and just skip rock after rock after rock. So I always loved throwing things. And then I got a football in my hand and loved doing that. But I knew I needed to get a scholar. I knew I wanted to go to college, and I knew the only way was getting a scholarship. And so I'll never forget. I was working out with a quarterback at a quarterback camp on a weekend at Saddleback Junior College down the street from where I grew up.
Where I did my summer school.
Yeah, and I worked out a couple times, and there was a couple guys that were getting scholarships, and I was in seventh or eighth grade. And there's a couple guys that I knew, one was going to UCLA, there was a handful of guys. And I remember being like, man, I'm better than that guy. And I'm better than that guy. And I'm better than that guy. This is my chance. And so I knew I needed a scholarship to go to college. And I loved the sport, and I loved to throw things and throw footballs. And that was my best opportunity. So I just dove all in. I worked as hard as I could and learned as much as I could. And, the rest is history from there.
Great story.
Rob, got kids. I see you got this stuff going on, huh?
Little guy sneaking in.
Yeah.
What's up, my man?
What's your name?
Carter.
That's Carter.
Carter, what's up? Are you going to play football?
Are you going to play football when you get older? Sure.
Yeah.
You want to think about it? All right.
No pressure.
None. Yeah, not in this house. Like I said, I don't have football stuff
everywhere.
I love
that.
So there,
I think that's
no pressure.
I think that's so healthy.
100%. Yeah. All right, my man. Well, hey, great catching up with you. You guys can, if you missed any of the episode, you can always go to twitch.tv/RobertJTurbin to watch a repeat of this episode visually. You'll be able to listen to it on Apple, on Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcast, and also it'll be up on my YouTube channel as well. So thanks everybody for tuning in. Carson, really appreciate you coming on, man, and I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thanks for taking the time.
Sounds good. Thanks for them. I'm honored to be the first guest of season two. So
yes.
Thank you.
Well, we'd love to have you back whenever this thing, I guess, wraps up. COVID, I don't know. It's not ending ever.
All right, guys. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you. Sweet.